Blog Talk Radio.
The HD View.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Help for HD, the HD View. This is your host, Melissa Biliari. Our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 or 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1. We'll cue you into the show. Please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. Thank you, 83,000 listeners, for tuning in. Tonight, I'm extremely honored and excited to introduce our incredible special guest, Dr. Vicki Wheelock. She is UC Davis Department of Neurology, Clinical Professor, Director, Neurology Residency Program, Director, Huntington's Disease Clinic, Site Investigator for Huntington Study Group, and Co-Director, Northern California Kaiser Palindromy Program, and I'll ask her to explain what that is. Dr. Wheelock is a neurologist with special interest in palindromy, which is a neurosurgical procedure, Parkinson's disease and Huntington's disease. But tonight we're going to be talking about PRECEL, an observational study being conducted at UC Davis Neurology in Sacramento, California. Welcome to the show, Dr. Wheelock. How are you?
I'm well, Melissa. Thank you so much for inviting me. Looking forward to this.
We're so excited to have you on the show. I've been trying to get you on for 4 years almost. So tonight we're going to talk about PRECEL.
I was just going to say thank you for your patience again. It's an honor to be here, and the only reason you haven't heard from me earlier is because busy.
Oh, we know how busy you and Terry are, and unfortunately Terry couldn't be with us tonight. But you know, we had Terry on the show, and she explained the flyer to us, and we got some really good information. We did a PSA, and so we're trying to educate the community about PRECEL, and maybe you can talk a little bit about the background of it and what the actual study plan entailed.
Okay, thank you. So we actually are conducting a study called PRECEL, which is part of a bigger project. And the bigger project is a grant that we were awarded by the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine back in July 2012. And the title of the grant is Mesenchymal Stem Cells Engineered to Produce BDNF for the Treatment of Huntington's Disease. The goal of that project is to finish up the stem cell safety and proof of concept studies in the animal model of Huntington's disease to obtain FDA approval to go forward to do an early phase one trial of stem cell treatment for people with Huntington's disease. And the plan that we're using is to use Dr. Jan Nolte's wonderful mesenchymal stem cells that she's been working with for many, many years that will be engineered to secrete a growth factor which is very much down-regulated in people with Huntington's disease as a strategy to slow the progression of Huntington's disease. So PRECEL is part of that project.
That's exciting. So for some of our listeners who may not know what mesenchymal stem cells are yet, can you kind of give them a little explanation of what that is? Because they're different types of stem cells.
That's right. So there are two basic types of stem cells. One type is the pluripotent stem cells, and that includes embryonic stem cells that are derived from people who are trying to have babies, and so they've been developed through in vitro fertilization. There's another type of pluripotent cell that can be engineered from, say, skin cells, and that was actually a wonderful discovery that led to a Nobel Prize in 2012. But those types of cells are not yet ready to go forward into human trials because there's an awful lot of understanding the cells and controlling and regulating them that has to happen at the basic science level, and those studies are going on right now around the world, actually. The other type of stem cell are adult stem cells, and adult stem cells are not pluripotent. They can only turn into certain types of tissues, but not every type of tissue in the body, and those are either hematopoietic stem cells, which make red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets that are, you know, bone marrow components, or the mesenchymal stem cells, which are also in the bone marrow, and they're actually support cells for bone marrow, but they're also found throughout the body in other areas. Mesenchymal stem cells have a lot of wonderful properties. Dr. Nolte, our stem cell director, has been working with them for many years now, and she actually has published extensively in using these cells to engineer them to produce different factors to help treat different diseases. And we are so, so fortunate that back in 2008, she became very inspired by the families that we know here in Northern California affected by Huntington's to help devote her lab's work into helping to find treatments and a cure for Huntington's disease. So her brilliant idea was to use these mesenchymal stem cells, which have a lot of special properties, as a way to deliver the right type of treatment into the brains of people who have Huntington's disease.
So exciting. Can you talk about your executive committee for the grant a little bit and tell us about your team?
Sure. So actually, this is called a translational grant, so it's part of translational medicine. And translational medicine is to take ideas from the laboratory, from laboratory research, and then to partner with clinicians and patients who are affected by those diseases and to try to develop new treatments or cures. So on our team, I'm the clinical lead, meaning the neurologist and the doctor who treats patients, who helped to design the grant. Dr. Nolte is my partner, or I'm her partner, that is, in developing the stem cells. So she's actually the expert in doing all the basic science laboratory work. And Dr. Nolte has a wonderful colleague, Geraldine Annette, who is the manager for all of the science side for the laboratory work. And then Terry Temkin is my partner working on the clinical side, managing all the parts of the study that involve human subjects and patients and families. So that's our executive team. On top of that, we have a huge group of people who are working with us, scientists and staff in the stem cell lab. We have regulatory people helping us out. We have a big team working on pre-cell to do all the different components. We also have collaborators from Australia, Dr. Julie Stout, who's a neuropsychologist, from Seattle, Dr. Elizabeth Aylward, who is a real expert, probably the world expert on imaging in Huntington's disease, and Dr. Steve Hirsch, who's at Mass General, and his lab is going to be doing biomarker work for our study. So we have quite a large group of people working on this.
That is fantastic. Okay, so can we talk about how is the trial going? What is the level of oversight? Are we meeting milestones? How does that work? And how does that all get reported?
Okay, thank you. So let me tell you a little bit about the process. Once we were granted the privilege of receiving the grant to start up this project and get it going, we needed to sit down and iron out a set of milestones for progress that had to be accepted by CIRMS before we could go forward. And the way that we designed the project was to, in the first 2 years, was to work very, very hard reaching all of the scientific milestones of producing the stem cells. So that's called chemistry and manufacturing, and that means producing the stem cells from qualified donors, from bone marrow donors, engineering the cells, banking the cells, testing them for stability and potency, and then also testing those cells that we intend to use for the patients in the future trial in the animal model. So there's a transgenic mouse model of Huntington's disease. That's a mouse that has the human Huntington's disease gene inserted, genetically inserted, and that's the model that we're testing these cells in. And then there also are huge regulatory steps that have to happen working toward FDA approval. Our treatment is going to be handled as if it's a drug, it has to be approved for research by the FDA, and the FDA actually has a section for stem cell and cellular therapy work, and so there's a process, sort of like a ladder that we have to climb leading up to something called an investigational new drug license, or an IND, and that's actually a license or permission to move forward into doing a trial in human subjects with the new treatment that we're developing. So anytime anyone develops a drug or a treatment that's administered to a patient, not surgery, but things that are manufactured, that has to be approved by the FDA. So in our study, that's going on very heavily in year one and in year two. But at the same time, we decided to design a study called PRECELL, which is an observational study for people with early stage Huntington's who want to volunteer to be potential candidates for the future plan study. So I want to be very careful when I say this, that we don't mm-hmm. have a stem cell trial yet. We have to work toward that with the mm-hmm. FDA approval. But what we're doing is we're taking the time now to enroll a group of 26 to 40 people with early stage Huntington's who will come in for very extensive evaluations every 6 months, and we are measuring the changes in their disease. We're doing brain measurements. We're collecting blood specimens and doing biomarker measurements so we can get a very good baseline and sort of a trajectory of change for everybody. And then, again, as we go forward with the research and once we secure that permission from the FDA as planned, then we'll go forward into a second study, and that's called HD-Cell, and that will be the actual phase one treatment trial. So we have sort of parallel lines of work going on both in the stem cell lab and on the human side. And on the human side, that's the study that's called PRECELL. And PRECELL, we designed it over many, many months, and it was submitted and approved to the UC Davis Institutional Review Board back in July that gave us the green light to go forward with getting the study started. And we actually started screening and enrolling people this fall. We are making very good progress on that, and we actually will be looking for participants up through at least the first 6 months of this year, possibly just a little bit longer. And the people who have volunteered come in for extensive screening studies, safety studies initially, and then if they meet all of the criteria for the study, then they're enrolled, and they will then come back every 6 months to repeat all of this testing.
Very exciting. How long does it normally take to go through a pre-IND and then get an FDA successful approval? Does it just depend on the trial?
It depends on the trial, and it depends on the product that you're making. So we had our pre-IND, two pre's, meeting last June,
wow. Okay.
In June of 2013. And to do that, what we did was we submitted a very detailed report to the FDA that was set up to inform them about what the plan was.
Here.
What our Oh, I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry.
I was getting some background noise here.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So for the pre-IND plan, we had to submit very extensive, detailed plan to the FDA saying, this is where we are, this is the work we've done so far, this is what we plan to do going forward. And then we had a phone call with the FDA with all of their experts and advisors where they had sent questions to us, and we talked about the questions. So they took a look at our plan and sent back a lot of very, very detailed questions. They very much engaged with us on the process. So from that point forward, then on the science side, Dr. Nolte's team has been going forward doing the experiments that are required to go forward for that, and we plan to have the pre-IND meeting that will be this year in the next few months. We're waiting for some experiments to finish up and to see what the results are. And then from that point, once we finish those, then we can go forward with an IND application. And the last one, the IND, has a 60-day turnaround by the FDA. So it lets you see if we the time between the pre-IND and the pre-IND depends on the progress, the scientific progress, and how far along we are in that plan. And each time that we engage with the FDA, they may ask us additional questions. They may have other comments for us. They have, again, this is their oversight, so that they may say, we want you to do some additional work, or we have a few other questions, or could you clarify this for us? So they're very, very actively involved in this. And it's our job to make sure that we do everything, that we anticipate their questions, that we have a very good plan of research and justification for all the steps, so that when we engage with them at every step along the way, we will be ready for them, and they won't send us back to the drawing board, so to speak.
Right. And because this is such a new type of clinical trial, don't you think they're being extra precautious?
Well, I think that they're always very cautious, but yes, they're being very cautious with this. There are several things about HDCell that that are really important to know. So first of all, I would say that we want to be really clear. This is a safety trial. So a phase one trial is a trial in which you take a small number of individuals, of volunteers, who in this case are affected by the disease that we're studying, Huntington's disease, and administer the treatment to them. And we'll do a small group of patients first and sit back and see how things are going and what the safety is, and then we'll plan to go forward with the next group and the next group. So that's the way that we've designed it. But one of the things about this trial is that I call it sort of a triple threat. So we're using stem cells, which by themselves require lots and lots of oversight and regulation, and then the stem mm-hmm. cells are actually acted on by gene therapy to get them to express BDNF. So that's another layer of safety that we have to look at. And then we'll be implanting them into the brain with a small surgical procedure. So that's just another layer of this. That's the triple threat part of this. So it is mm-hmm. a complex trial. They will be looking very carefully at each and every component. Not they'll look at the overall, but they'll look specifically at the cells, at the gene therapy, at how we will deliver the cells. Everything about it, they'll be having oversight, and they will have questions for us, regulations for us, and it's really up to them to determine the parameters that, you know, once we propose them.
Interesting. Do we know how the BDNF is going to be engineered and managed?
Yes, actually, that's already been designed, and that's okay. In terms of the milestone. So that was one of our earliest milestones, was to design a way to engineer the cells to start to produce BDNF. And so Dr. Nolte's team went right to work on that, and they've actually been able to successfully complete that work and engineer the cells to secrete BDNF. And so, again, her team is just making fabulous progress on that, actually. So that's one thing
wow.
that we've already completed.
Very interesting. I think we can tell everyone that they can find Precell right now on clinicaltrials.gov. We can talk about inclusion-exclusion criteria, too, if you wish. There's a lot, but you know, maybe we can kind of condense it into a few words, so to speak. Dr. Wheelock, if you
can address that
a little bit.
Sure, that would be fine. And I just want to let listeners know, you can go to clinicaltrials.gov and put in Precell, P-R-E-C-E-L-L. It will take you right to the page that has the information that we're about to talk about. And so the inclusion criteria for Precell, let me back up for a second. The way we designed this is that we anticipated that when we were starting Precell, that we were looking at people who are potential stem cell candidates. So the very lengthy list of inclusion and exclusion criteria is based on a planned future trial of doing stem cell therapy. So that's why it's kind of a long list, because we had to think very long and hard about this from a safety standpoint. So the first inclusion criteria is that we're only treating adults. We're not going to be able to treat children in this study. So they have to be 18 years old and older. We're treating both men and women. People have to be symptomatic and already diagnosed with Huntington's disease. We do not intend to do this trial in people who are pre-manifest, who know that they have the gene expansion or might be at risk of having the gene expansion. It's not our intention to go forward at this time. people have to be in the early stages of Huntington's disease, and by that we mean that they still have to be relatively independent. And we have a staging scale for independence that we're using as a major criteria. And the reason for that is that we know that giving BDNF will help to rescue sick and dying neurons in the target area of the brain. And if we go too late in the disease, the chance of helping people starts to shrink dramatically. So the risk-benefit ratio really becomes unfavorable. And we also need the people in the study to have a caregiver or informant, someone who sees them regularly and knows them, so that they can be another set of eyes on how the person's doing before the, you know, while we're doing the observational study, so that we can better watch their safety afterwards, so that we would have someone close to that person in the study who could let us know immediately if there were any changes that we would have to be concerned about for safety. And then people who are in the trial have to agree not to have a family while they're in the trial. So we have asked women and men to use birth control, to be willing to use birth control, because we would not want to inadvertently expose a fetus to this experimental treatment. So those are the inclusion criteria. The exclusion criteria would be people who don't meet any of the above, but also a few other things. If people have very marked cognitive impairment from Huntington's disease, then they wouldn't be a good candidate for this study. Doing brain surgery in people who are significantly cognitively impaired may be unsafe. People who have serious other illnesses, active cancer or recent cancer, for instance, or serious heart disease or lung disease or immune deficiency, things that would make surgery dangerous for them would not be candidates for this study as well. And people who have a history of having other brain problems, for instance, a traumatic brain injury or other things that made significant changes in their brain, it might not be safe for them to go forward with the brain surgery. So that's another group that we're excluding. And then another one that's turned out to be fairly big is people who are unable to have an MRI scan. So there's a few medical reasons why people might not be able to have MRI. The biggest one is probably if you have a heart pacemaker or something like that implanted in your body, it wouldn't be safe. But then there are other reasons that people can't have MRI related to implants or surgery around the head or metal fragments or things like that could be problematic. So we have a list of exclusions for MRI that would make it hard or impossible for someone to be in this study, because we're relying on MRI for measuring the brain, measuring the progression, but also when it comes time for surgery, the surgery will be based on doing an MRI scan to target the part of the brain. So those are the major exclusions. There's, again, a lengthy list, but they're mostly set up to look for people who are generally healthy and, you know, fairly high functioning, still have the ability to do a lot of things for themselves, and but still have a diagnosis of Huntington's.
Okay, very good. And I want to ask you a specific question about the age criteria. You say
yes.
Men or women age 18 or older. So if they were diagnosed before the age of 20, wouldn't they be considered juvenile?
Well, exactly. Yes. So it could be that we would see a person who is an adult whose Huntington symptoms started before age 20. They could potentially be in the study. What I meant to say is that we can't include minors. Children, people under 18
right.
are not eligible
okay.
for the study. But it may be that people in the study who are over age 18 may have been diagnosed before that age
okay.
and or may have had symptoms before age 18. That's absolutely right. Thank you. That's a good question.
Okay. So then would they have to have been already diagnosed? Or do you do diagnosing for people who are 18 or older?
Yeah, good question. They need to already be diagnosed. So we don't
okay.
have any provision in the study for diagnosing people or saying that you definitely have Huntington's now or you don't. We've asked everybody
mm-hmm.
Who's interested to provide documentation to us that they've already seen a healthcare provider
okay.
and been diagnosed with Huntington's disease.
Okay. And then for those who are maybe not in California, can they also participate?
Yes, they can, and there's no limitation for people from out of state to be in the study, but there is a barrier, and the barrier is that we are really not allowed to support travel for people who want to be in the study,
oh.
and
mm-hmm.
so obviously mm-hmm. people, if they wanted to, if they're able or have the means to come to California to be seen for the study visits, that, you know, they're perfectly eligible. There's no California residency that's required. But it turns out that that is a barrier for people because it does, pre-sale visits are every 6 months. There's two visits that are within a month of each other, but the pre-sale visits are every 6 months, which is enough of a burden. But when we get forward to HD-cell, we're going to be seeing people very frequently, you know, right after surgery and 2 weeks later and a month later. And that, I think, is going to end up being problematic for people who don't live in California.
True. And how often do they have to come for follow-up?
Well, again, for pre-cell, we do a screening visit, and that takes place over 2 long days, and then they come back in if they meet all the criteria a month later, so there's 2 visits within a month, and then it's just every 6 months after that. For HD-cell, the way we have it designed right now, people will be coming in preoperatively to have, you know, all of their pre-op work done, and then they'll be seen, you know, a couple days after leaving the hospital, and then a week later, and then 2 weeks later, and then a month later. So we'll be watching them very, very closely mm-hmm. and very carefully.
Right. So as far as pre-cell goes, this is for just observational, and then HD-cell is going to be for those participants who made it through, right? Made it through the
gauntlet. Yes, and actually, exactly. And so, this was something that we had to think really hard about. So right now, the plan, the budget for the project for doing the phase one trial is to do it in 20 to 26 patients. And so, you know, again, depending on how far forward we go, as I mentioned, we will be doing a small first group and then a next group and then a next group, you know, as long as everything is going well and safety is there. So one of the things that we had to think about is, let's say we have a group of people who are interested in being in the stem cell study. One thing that we know from doing observational research in Huntington's is that sometimes people are very interested early on, but then they may change their mind at any point down the road and say, you know what, this is not a good fit for me. It's not working for me, or it's too hard to come, or my caregiver, it just can't get away for another day to keep doing this study. So we expect that some people are going to choose to drop out. And by the way, that's mm-hmm. their right, you know, this is completely voluntary. But one other thing that could happen is over the 12 to 18 months or possibly longer that people are in pre-cell, it's possible they could get another illness or something could happen or they could have a brain injury or something where they wouldn't be eligible, not through no fault of their own whatsoever, but there could be another illness that comes up. So we had to sort of estimate how many people we'd need to recruit for pre-cell, because our goal all along has been that everybody who completes pre-cell and maintains their eligibility will be a candidate to go forward into HD-cell. That's what we're trying to do. We're not going to have a lottery. We're not just going to, you know, enroll dozens of people and then say, okay, 3 lucky people get to do it. But we have to be very careful to communicate to everyone. First of all, being in pre-cell does not guarantee that you'll be in HD-cell because we don't have the approval to have HD-cell at all. So we have to be really clear about that. And then secondly, even though we've planned so carefully for this, it is possible that we could come up with yet another exclusion. Let's say in the safety studies in the mouse model, we find some other situation or illness with BDNF where there could be a problem. Then we have to be very cautious, and there might be a 19th exclusion or a 20th exclusion that we didn't know about, you know, as we're planning this. So there are some unknowns up ahead of us. There's no question about that, but we're trying as much as we possibly can to enroll a group of people, each of whom will have a good chance of being able to go forward.
Wow. That's amazing. So it's kind of stage work, right? Just kind of have to go through stages and see what the progress is and then go through another stage, right? It's not
exactly.
Like a,
sort of,
like you said, a guaranteed process. This is all study.
Exactly. It's all, again, it's all research. And one thing, if there's one thing about research we know, it's things don't always work out the way you plan from the very beginning. So, and that's okay. We expect there to be some changes or some surprises. If we knew everything, we wouldn't have to do research. If we had all the answers, we wouldn't have to do this. So
I know, right?
So that's one thing.
Well,
Right. We have to be flexible, and we have to be very authentic about what we're finding and what we're seeing. And, again, we're under very, very intense regulatory oversight for everything that we're doing. And
yes.
I have to tell you, I love that. I think that's the way it should be. We want to make sure we do the best possible science, that we've thought of everything and our reviewers have thought of everything, and we also want to do the best care for our patients, because at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, is the welfare of the people who come into the study.
Now, does your committee, your executive committee, I guess you'd call it, do they oversee all of the study material, the progress and all that as well? I mean, or do you have other people that you have to report to, and who gets to see all this information?
Yeah, so for us, the people on the executive team, and that's myself, Dr. Nolte, Geraldine, Annette, and Terry Temkin, we see everything to do with the study, the four of us. So we have the sharing of the information about the trial. And for me as the PI, I have complete responsibility for knowing everything about the study and being, you know, aware of everything. So we have oversight at our institution at UC Davis by the Institutional Review Board. We have to make reports to them on an annual basis, and we have to report to them anything that's unexpected that would occur in the conduct of the study on the human side. On the other side, on the science side, we actually are making reports to CIRM every 3 months. We have quarterly reports that have to attest to our progress on the milestones, and so we have to show all the results of the experiments that are going on and, you know, everything that we have agreed to show them as part of the process of going forward toward that IND. And they will be, we have a science officer assigned to us who is directly responsible for our project, and she works with a team at CIRM of other science officers, so there's, again, broad, you know, regulatory oversight. And then we do have scheduled next week our first clinical development advisory panel. And so CIRM has assembled a group of experts who are from outside of California, so there's no conflict of interest, who are experts in every part of developing stem cell therapies and new drug therapies for different diseases. And they've assembled a panel that's specific for our project for Huntington's disease, and they'll be reviewing everything that we've done in the last year and asking questions of our group and advising CIRM about potential additional things or potential directions or any sort of feedback they can give us to make sure, again, that we're doing the best science and the best and that we're on a good path toward that pre-IND and the IND.
So they
One
have
other,
done I, the – okay, go ahead.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot to mention, Melissa, there's more oversight,
yeah.
And let me just mention this. We have contracted with an agency, an outside agency.
Oh.
It's a company that does regulatory management for pre-cell, for the clinical, the human research side of this. So this is actually a company that has expertise in the regulatory oversight of human research studies. And as part of that, they're making sure that we have done all the regulatory steps that we need to. They've developed a safety monitoring plan and a number of other parts of this, including a medical monitor who's overlooking all the work that we're doing, the test results, the inclusion-exclusion criteria. They send out a monitor every 3 months to in-person monitor what we're doing here at the site.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually part of doing human subject research that's very standard. So, again, I think I've mentioned so many different layers of oversight that we have, both institutional, state-wise, federal, you know, with this agency, and this is the atmosphere in which it's necessary to conduct research that's leading toward human subjects and toward human treatment.
This is so interesting. I know there's something I was going to ask you about all that, and now it slipped my mind. But I think Katie is here with us, our VP, Help for HD International VP, Katie Jackson. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Hello. Hello, Dr. Wheelock.
And I think she has something to tell you and some questions possibly.
Yeah, I listening to Dr. Wheelock talk, it feels so I still kind of feel like this is so surreal. I remember around seven years ago, hearing Dr. Nolte speak at a convention about her MSC cells as a potential therapy for Huntington's disease. And then I had the honor of being one of the three speakers at the California Stem Cell Agency, where Dr. Wheelock was awarded her $19 million grant for her project. And I think we need to add that this is looking up there. She got number one by the Scientific Review Board. At CIRM. So I think that shows
the countless
hours that Dr. Wheelock and Terry and Jan and Gerlyn and that team, that they, the efforts that they put for us in the Huntington's community, was just, I can't even imagine the countless hours that they put into that to score number one by the Scientific Review Board that day. Now my husband is enrolled in pre-cell. So I know it's moving forward because we're a part of it, and it's so exciting.
That's awesome.
To be enrolled. And during the what we've experienced in pre-cell is it's been incredibly therapeutic for Mike and I, not only because we have hope of future therapy using stem cell, but also, there's nothing like being with Dr. Wheelock and Terry. We're talking about HD experts.
Dr.
Wheelock has been working with Huntington's for 17 years, and Terry has been working with Huntington's for 15 years. So these are Huntington's experts, and when you get to spend time with them, the therapy and how the therapy that's happened, I've watched it happen with my husband, has been amazing. That's been very, being a part of it has been very inspiring to me, and also has been hopeful. I felt so much hope for a brighter future, not only for my children, but our whole HD community through this project. So I want to, thank Dr. Wheelock for all the countless hours and everything she has done for this. It's so exciting. And not only am I a Huntington's advocate, but I'm also a stem cell advocate because I truly believe that regenerative medicine is the true hope in finding therapies and a cure for Huntington's disease. I believe that in my heart. So now I've taken a very active role as a stem cell advocate as well. So my hope is we get this trial enrollment complete and we can move forward fast to hopefully get this therapy to our community someday. Yeah.
Maybe that's why you're our VP, because Health for HD International feels the same way.
Yes.
So. Well, thank you. And Katie, I just want to say, it's hard for me to describe in words what an honor it is for Terry and for me to work with families like yours and work with other families affected by HD. You guys give back 110%. Everything that we do, it's just right back at us. And honestly, it takes a tremendous amount of courage and commitment to come forward with a study like this. I'm going to tell you right now, this study is a heck of a lot of work. I just feel like apologizing to people who are in it that we ask you to do so many different things to be in this study. It's because it's this triple threat study, we really feel we have to do all these different activities. And so we are so grateful to everybody who's found it in their heart to step forward and to volunteer. You have the trust that you've placed in us just makes us work all the harder so that we can do the right thing and be there for you. I mean, it's just that constant inspiration. And I think that one thing I will say also is that a big part of this study are the caregivers. We're having caregivers be part of the study for safety, to make sure that we're not missing anything and make sure that we're fully aware of everything that's going on. But we're also asking people who are already working really, really hard as family members and caregivers to do some more, can you give us a little more, and to meet with us and fill out surveys and answer questions and come to all these visits. So it's we're asking a lot of people, and you really, really inspire us. I mean that, all of us. I know I'm speaking for the entire team, the lab, everybody. Thank you, Katie.
And being in pre-cell, I didn't feel like we've been through the baseline screening baseline, and then we actually just had our 3-month phone appointment, and we're waiting for our 3 months to go into our 6-month appointment. So I've been through all that, and I haven't felt like it has been a strain on us at all. If anything, we've felt excited to do all this, and we feel like we're helping and we're pushing forward to get treatments for Huntington's disease for our future generations. So for me, I haven't felt like it's been a tremendous amount of work at all. If anything, my husband and I have felt honored to be a part of it and do it. So I haven't felt that at all, but we thank you for all the work that you guys have done, because truly, I mean, this is the most exciting thing, I think, going on right now for Huntington's disease, and I am 100% so excited to be a part of it. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
We're making history. We're making history right now.
Yes, we are. I was just going to say one thing I want to also point out is that wherever we end up with this study, because obviously we don't know, where we're going to end up with this study. We have a lot of hurdles to cross before we get to doing that phase 1 trial. But whatever we've done so far, we're learning so much. We're making progress. This is helping us out. And it's helping us out not only with this trial, but with other trials that will involve treatments to help out with Huntington's disease. I'm very convinced that we all ourselves and the patients and families and everybody have a lot to learn from this. And one thing that we're really committed to doing is to, make sure that we report what we found, what our findings are, and make sure that we let the Huntington's community know what the progress is, because that's very, very important to it. You guys inspire us. We're doing this work for families and for patients. So just, again, wanted to jump in and say that that's something that's incredibly important to us.
I think one of the unrecognized benefits of participating in the research and the clinical studies and trials is that we get to see people like Vicki Wheelock, Terry Temkin, and where else can you be seen by expert HD clinicians? Most people don't ever have that chance. So I think it's just something that we need to really recognize and appreciate too, don't you think, Katie?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
But I do want to say there's a great network, though, through the Centers of Excellence. So, again, shout out to HTSA for funding the 21 Centers of Excellence. And we realize not everybody can get to a center, but there are just fabulous experts throughout the country. And HTSA, I think, has worked really hard to create the Center of Excellence program. And in Northern California, our chapter, and in Southern California and San Diego areas, the chapters of HTSA have been just phenomenal at supporting their centers. The centers belong to the patients and to the families who are, literally raising money for us so that we can provide the services that we do. So big thanks to that. And I think we're fortunate to have so many wonderful people working in HD.
Yes, I agree. We need to keep that funding coming in. hey, Katie, do you think that you could talk? Katie? I don't know if I lost her.
Hi.
I'm sorry.
Katie, did you hear my question?
No, what was it?
I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about, because we're getting ready to kind of wrap things up, but I thought maybe it would be good if you could talk a little bit about your experience in enrolling in PreCell and how you went about your initial visit and everything. Can you talk about that?
I think when we got ready, we've done clinical trials in the past, and I think what we really wanted to gear up for HD PreCell to be a success, because this is so close to Mike and I being a part of this whole thing. It's been so exciting. So we wanted to make sure we definitely set up our day for success. And we knew the screening process and the baseline were going to be long appointments. And so I packed food and I packed water bottles. I'm sure Dr. Wheelock was probably laughing as I walked into her office with bags and bags of food and water and stuff for Mike. We also prepared for the MRI with Mike by getting a sleep mask for him. I kept him up. We've done a lot of different preparing for PreCell to be a success for Mike and myself, and that really has worked to our benefit, really having a set up task plan for the days that we do go in for the clinical trial days for the screening and the baseline. But in saying that, I think that we are so just excited and to be a part of it and be in that office and be moving forward with PreCell. that I think that has also helped make it a great success. But I definitely have taken a lot of time making Mike comfortable through this whole process.
So, and it shows,
Katie,
and it shows when you when you're prepared like that, it makes things so much easier. So thank you. What important sort of tips for people, I think, for any type of a research study, just to be thoughtful about how the day's going to go. really important. Thank you so much for saying that. I think those are true words of wisdom.
Yeah, and I think definitely in anything when we have, you know, my husband's always hungry, so bringing food just to put him at ease, water, and then bringing something. There is a little bit of downtime while you're switching gears. Like if we had been with Dr. Wheelock and we're switching gears and going into something with Terry or something with Dr. Scher or something like that, there may be a little bit of downtime. So bringing, you know, a newspaper or a magazine, or even like Mike, I brought his iPad. So he didn't get, you know, so it just kept him comfortable in doing what he would have been doing at home anyways, and keeping him just also comfortable through those transition periods as well. But I have to say that in pre-cell, they've done an excellent job of there hasn't been a lot of downtime for us. The whole time we've been busy doing different things, not to the point where it's been stressful by any means, but we haven't had a lot of downtime during this study so far.
Katie, what did you do for the MRI? How did you prepare for the MRI? Because I know some folks have a little trouble with that, but Katie did something pretty amazing for her husband.
Well, what I did for the MRI is I decided that if he would fall asleep, it would probably be the best, because my husband, his chorea goes down when he sleeps a lot. He actually hardly has any when he sleeps. And so what I did was the night before the MRI, I kept him up really, really late, really late. And we watched movies together and we did some stuff. I kept him up really late. The next morning, him up, and before we went, I gave him this big, hearty breakfast so he would be tired. And then I put the eye mask. I bought him a really nice eye mask for his, so he would feel like he was sleeping. You know, those are dark and comfortable, the silk eye masks. I bought him the really good earplugs to put in his ears so he wouldn't hear the noise from the MRI machine. And when it was all said and done, when Mike walked out of the MRI about 45 minutes later, I could tell he had been sleeping by the way he looked. I said, "Oh, how was it?" And he goes, "It was great. I fell asleep." And the lady who did the imaging said, "Oh yeah, he did great. He definitely he fell asleep." So it worked out really good because she got all the images that she needed from Mike, and Mike was comfortable because he just fell asleep. So it worked out pretty good how we planned the MRI. I'm not saying that would be maybe the I'm not a doctor, so I don't know if that's the best method to use, but it worked for us.
Whatever works for you, do it.
Right. It works.
Do that.
I think that for people in the study, if you think about it for yourself or for your family member, if you would tailor it to that person, right? You know, for what would work for them. And I agree, it's ideal if you can fall asleep. Not everybody can fall asleep in the scanner, but one thing is that we really work with people so that they kind of know what to expect. We try to do that. And maybe Katie, you could speak to that a little bit in terms of, you know, for Mike, if it was kind of the way he expected it or if it was different, because I think being prepared that way really makes a difference.
I think we were prepared very well. I think someone that's going for their first clinical trial ever, we have done other clinical trials, so we kind of knew how screening went and things of that, you know, of that nature. Maybe if it was their first clinical trial, it may be a little bit, I don't know, if it may be a little nerve-wracking for them, but no, I think you explained it perfectly on what we were going to do, and I think I don't think we were thrown off by anything at all in pre-cell. I think it's been a wonderful experience. I can't say a negative thing about it. I really can't. I think from the second we get there to pre-cell until the second we were leaving, seeing, you know, Dr. Wheelock, Terry, Dr. Scher, oh, you're going to have to forgive me. Dr. Wheelock, what's the name of the other lady we saw that does
our neuropsychologist? Yeah, it's Dr. Farias. Yes.
Dr. Farias, yeah. Dr. Farias, and then seeing Lisa there, we saw Amanda there. We, you know, I think that the whole step has been so comfortable. I don't think we were thrown off or we felt like any curveballs were thrown at us at all. You've been very clear on what we were going to do. And even going over to UC Davis and doing the chest x-rays, the blood work, the EKG, those, I mean, that was really easy. It was just, you know, two on the same floor, one right above. We knocked it out really quick. It wasn't stressful at all for us to get those. It sounds overwhelming. Oh, you have to go get an EKG. Then you have to get a chest x-ray. Then you have to get your blood. And then you get an MRI. It sounds like it's so stressful, but when you do it, it's really not. It really wasn't stressful at all. It's all in that same area. So for me, it was very easy to accomplish that. And Mike.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah. And I think the key also is to be prepared and know what it is that you're going to be doing. And that, you know, once you know that, you can prepare. And to me, that's so important, right?
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, good.
Well, Dr. Wheelock, it's just been such a pleasure having you on the show. And I hear this is your 17th year of working for HD, and we want you to keep going.
Okay.
Keep going. Never stop.
I'm not planning to stop.
You.
Not yet.
Okay,
thank
good.
You. Thank you.
Was there anything else that we didn't cover that maybe we missed that you wanted to point out, Dr. Wheelock?
No. I think, again, really good questions that you asked, and I just want to thank both of you for the opportunity to talk about the progress so far. We're so grateful to you for your advocacy, and it's good just to be able to share information. I think that's what we're all thirsty for, is to have good information. So, yeah, thank you.
Well, please give our best and our love to the whole team and tell them we think about them every day and appreciate all the work that you're doing. And
we'll have a couple
announcements here. If you can hang with us once I finish the announcements and the closing of the show, put us all in the screening room for one last little chat. And then everyone out there, our next Monday, we have the HD View with Dr. Mary Edmondson. And then that's next Monday, actually, not Tuesday. And then Tuesday the 25th, we have Dr. Ben Deverman. He's from Caltech, and he's doing a series for us on gene therapy education, which is really cool. And this concludes our show for tonight, and I just want to thank you again, Dr. Wheelock, for spending this time with us. Thank you, everyone out there, for tuning in. And get the free app, Help for HD, the original mobile connection to education resources and information about JHD and HD. Find us on Facebook, Help for HD on Facebook, or www.helpforhd-international.org. And don't forget h4hdiregister.org, a new registry for HD patients. And we are going to be doing a drawing every month for $100. So for those of you who are in the registry, we're going to put your name in a little hat, and we're going to draw out a name each month and send you a check for $100. So that's going to be a pretty good deal. So everyone have a great night, and we'll talk to you soon. Hello, everyone. This is Melissa Biliardi, President and CEO of Help for HD International. I'm here with Katie Jackson, my VP of Operations, to talk to you about a very exciting study that is now enrolling at UC Davis, California. PRECEL is an observational study. A group of up to 40 patients with early-stage Huntington's disease will be enrolled in this study to establish a baseline and study changes over time in measures of movement, thinking, behavior, brain imaging, blood and spinal fluid markers. The information from the study assessments will help Dr. Wheelock and the research team learn more about the rate of change in these measures in people with early stage
Huntington's disease. Participants enrolled in this study may be eligible to participate in a future planned study of stem cell therapy for Huntington's disease called HD-Cell. Katie, can you please tell us about who can participate in HD Pre-Cell?
Hello, everyone. In order to participate in HD Pre-Cell, you must be over 18 years of age and have tested positive for Huntington's disease. This study is for individuals in early-stage Huntington's disease with some movement changes but stable mood and thinking skills. You must have a caregiver or informant who will be willing to come to the study visit. Individuals with childbearing potential must agree to birthal measures for the whole length of the study. Additional study criteria apply that can be discussed with study coordinator Terry Temkin. If you are interested in participating, Dr. Wheelock and the research team will first have to determine if you are eligible. That will be done by reviewing your medical records and performing a research screening visit. There will be physical and neurological examinations and written and verbal tests to assess your mood and thinking skills. There is also a rating scale to measure your ability to function in day-to-day life. Brain scans, heart rhythm tests, chest x-rays, spinal tap, and blood tests will be scheduled to make sure there is no underlying medical problems that would make it unsafe for you to participate. These tests will be repeated at six-month intervals. You will be enrolled in this study for 12 to 18 months.
Thanks, Katie. Okay, so let's talk about some of the risks associated with participation in this study. Some individuals may experience emotional discomfort when being observed for symptoms of Huntington's disease. Some individuals may feel claustrophobic having a brain scan. There may be minor pain and possibly a bruising from blood draws and lumbar puncture. There is the potential for a headache after a spinal tap, and there will be exposure to minimal amount of radiation from the chest x-ray. What are the benefits to me if I decide to participate in Pre-Cell? Subjects who successfully complete Pre-Cell and meet future study eligibility criteria will be considered for a planned stem cell therapy trial, HD-Cell. Although there is no direct benefit to you in this observational study, you will be contributing to the growing knowledge of Huntington's disease. In addition, you will be observed and studied by a top HD care team at UC Davis. If you're interested in participating in this exciting new study for Huntington's disease, you can contact Terry Temkin at 916-734-6278. You can also email Terry at teresa.temkin@ucdmc.ucdavis.edu. Thank you, everyone. This public service announcement has been brought to you by Help for HD International.
Give me a second, I need to get my story straight. My friends are in the bathroom getting higher than the Empire State. My lover, she's waiting for me just across the bar. My seat's been taken by some sunglasses asking about a scar, and I know I gave it to you months ago. I know you're trying to forget, but between the drinks and subtle things, the holes in my apologies, you know, I'm trying hard to take it back. So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight. bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home tonight.